Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is the Scare Guy Show, the home edition. It's been about a month since we've had a show, but we are your home for news and insider opinions from the world of horror conventions, horror attractions, films, and anything that's scary fun, kind of like the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, the most notorious hotel of horrors from downtown Los Angeles. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about that tonight. We have some very special guests that I'll introduce in just a minute. But first, let's let the host go ahead and introduce themselves.
I'm Katie, a.k.a. this is Rin Scare Guy tonight, a.k.a. the final girl. And yeah, you can, I'm usually helping with the social media aspect. So.
Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's Ben Cleaver, actor, comedian, writer. People always ask me, hey, Ben, why are you always drinking out of that red cup? Well, it's because whenever Ben Cleaver shows up, it's always a party.
All right. And I'm Cheeseman on the exercise bike because I can't be on the couch, so I figured I better get in shape. But I'm here to hang with ScareGuy.com.
And we also have Ryan in the booth. Ryan, how's it going?
Houston,
it's going great, y'all. It's all sounding great. Let's just make sure we all got our headphones on and just right there, just so we can all sound good. But yeah, excited to hear all about the true crime and all about this episode.
All right, it's going to be exciting. Speaking of this episode, I do want to emphasize up front: this is the Scare Guy Show, where we kind of have a lot of fun with scary stuff, horror movies, and stuff like that. And we do want to recognize, and absolutely let you know that we know that there's a lot of scary stuff for real happening in the country and the world right now. We recognize that. Our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Stay inside. Watch the Scare Guy Show. Listen to these podcasts. Have some fun. And we will get through this. I would like to introduce, we have two very, very special guests on the show tonight, because the topic of our show is going to be the Cecil Hotel, which is reportedly one of the most haunted places in the world, but it is definitely one of the most notorious spots in Los Angeles. Has a long line of suicides and murders and mayhem and ghost sightings, all that great stuff. So to help us walk through tonight's episodes, we have some true crime and some LA specialists. First up is Bethany Jones. She is a veteran true crime television producer and host of the Pros and Cons podcast, which is the ultimate insider into the world of true crime, with insights from the pros and cons that actually lived the case. She has produced hours of true crime TV for networks like Oxygen, A&E, LMN, CNN, and Discovery. She's interviewed the leading government official, federal agents, U.S. attorneys, and law enforcement officers from the country, and she has a great relationship with the Department of Homeland Security, ICE, FBI, as well as local, state, and international law enforcement. She was also selected by the FBI director in Los Angeles to be one of the few to take part in the FBI Citizens Academy. Bethany, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me so much. And I'm so excited to be here and to take you guys behind the crime scene tape and behind the scenes of the Cecil Hotel.
We are so looking forward to that. Also on the show tonight, for the very first time, we are so excited to have Nancy Ray Gunn. May not be her real name, but it is a great name, Nancy Ray hyphen Gunn. She's a fifth generation native of Los Angeles and bleeds Dodger blue. Her great great grandfather was the maitre d' at the famous Coconut Grove at the Ambassador Hotel, where Bobby Kennedy was shot. That's a very cool fact. She spent more than a decade and a half as a journalist reporting on weird Los Angeles news stories as well as entertainment. Totally Weird Los Angeles. That is her website. It's the ultimate community for those interested in the weird wonderfulness that is Los Angeles. It features a podcast, a blog, social media community, products. TWLA, Totally Weird Los Angeles, takes all the best aspects of Hidden Los Angeles, Atlas Obscura, and Uhlhauser's California's Gold and rolls them into one irreverent oddball community. They even have a cool special series on the Black Dahlia. Welcome, Nancy, to the podcast tonight. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm excited to talk about some weird LA stuff, the Cecil Hotel, which just like gives you the creeps when you walk past it and all that good stuff. So thank you.
Oh, everything about it is creepy. Hey, Nancy, tell us a little bit about Totally Weird Los Angeles.
Totally Weird Los Angeles is kind of a passion project that my co-host Carrie Dunlap and our producer Emily Lanigan, we've been doing for the last 2 years now, and we have a podcast and we have a website and we have a social media community. Enough, like we started as a podcast, like we even have merch to sell and t-shirts and quarantine masks and yoga videos and stuff like that. So yeah,
what's the website?
Know, all that LA kind of stuff.
Yeah, what is the website?
totallyweirdla.com.
totallyweirdla.com.
Oh, say that again. Yeah. I couldn't hear you.
totallyweirdla.com. Yeah. So we will make sure we put that. Yep. Okay. Can you hear me, Nancy?
You're going in and out just a little bit, but like not in a good way. Can you? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. We can hear you really good. So Ryan will try to work on that with you right now.
Okay, perfect.
But then, hey, Bethany, so give us a little bit. I kind of like ran through your bio. You've been on the show before. You had a great episode when we talked about the death of a B-movie director. Tell us, if you can remind everybody, tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I got started on a scripted series. And since then, I have gone and done a ton of documentaries. Ranging from, you know, kids that commit homicide, juvenile lifers, things like that, all the way to working with espionage and the like. And I got the nickname, the Inmate Whisperer. So my producing partner, Adriana, and I, we started The Pros and Cons. We're two veteran true crime producers who take you behind the crime scene tape and behind the scenes and tell you how the true crime shows you love and hold near and dear to your heart are made. So,
all right.
Super exciting.
And where, remind us again, where can folks find your podcast?
Oh, at The Pros and Cons Show on Twitter and at The Pros and Cons Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. We have a private Facebook group and we also have a public feed that we put out, which we, you know, retweeted and reshared you guys on Facebook today. So
yeah, that's, thank you for that. Hopefully we have a lot of people tuning in then tonight. So what we're going to do now is, let me just let everybody know, we're going to first cover our convention updates. Katie's going to do that for us. Then we're gonna take a little short minute to talk about a really cool thing on Netflix that we're all kind of obsessed about. And then we're going to get right into the Cecil Hotel. So, Katie, if you don't mind giving us the horror convention update.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you guys are new to our show, I'm just going to give you guys a little update about, we talk a lot about what upcoming horror events are coming, but unfortunately, due to the COVID-19, there have been a lot of cancellations and postponings. So this is a quick update on some of those events. For example, Texas Frightmare Weekend, which is supposed to take place in Dallas, Texas, was postponed from May 1st through 3rd until September 11th through 13th. So a little bit like more to the fall, so more around Halloween. So, you know, kind of think that's cool. Then Monsterpalooza, this one is kind of sad because it was canceled. Monsterpalooza, as of course, if you guys are in SoCal, is in Pasadena, California from May 8th through 10th. So unfortunately that was canceled, but Son of Monsterpalooza is still scheduled for September 18th through 20th. So I'm sure there'll be a better programming for Son of Monsterpalooza, given the fact that Monsterpalooza got canceled. Again, right into spook season, which we'll talk about more when we get closer to Halloween. But Spooky Empire Orlando, which was scheduled for May 22nd through 24th, is currently in limbo, although not yet canceled. They said they're still working on the convention, but are monitoring state and federal recommendations. No more guests will be announced until a final decision is made. Obviously, this is towards the end of May, so we don't really know what's going on at the end of May yet. So, and then Carolina Fear Fest in Raleigh, North Carolina, also May 22nd through May 24th, but is postponed until July 4th weekend. So July 3rd through 5th. That is an interesting time for a fear event, or a pride event. Midwest Haunters Convention, June 5th through 7th, was postponed until July 24th through 26th, with the pre-show haunt tour on July 23rd. Is that Comic-Con weekend?
That is Comic-Con weekend, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have some competition. Well, we'll see. Find out about that. And then Living Dead weekend is in Monroe, Pennsylvania, June 12th through 14th. It is still happening inside the Monroeville Mall, home of Dawn of the Dead. That's a cool place for an event. I like that. Yeah. And then Midsummer Scream, which if you guys are from Southern California, you know that that is the convention that takes place in the middle of the summer to kind of help us jumpstart us people who celebrate Halloween all year long. That's how we get the official, society appropriate time to start celebrating Halloween, as I call it, the people who don't like Halloween all year long. And that's Long Beach in July 31st through August 2nd. Wow, that would be a long convention. My bad, folks. Through August 2nd, it is still going on as planned. But if you guys do follow us on Twitter or on Instagram, we're trying to update you guys as often as we find that information. So if that does get canceled or does get postponed, we will make sure we tell you guys about it. So,
Katie, the Houston Horror Film Festival, I think.
Oh, I did miss that one. Yeah, sorry, my bad.
No worries.
June 12th through 14th. They're still hoping for a June show, but they have been monitoring information daily, just like a lot of stuff during that time, and have a few fall alternative dates lined up just in case. That's good. They're planning ahead.
Yeah.
Just in
case. Good for them.
With film festivals, especially horror film festivals, it's really a shame to like completely cancel those, because so many small horror films would not be able to be seen with those if those get canceled. And the film industry is definitely already taking a hit due to the COVID-19. So.
Right. Thank you so much, Katie, for giving us the updates.
Yeah.
And be following along, everybody, on our social media, because we will be updating you, Katie. Katie does a really good job of updating everybody. And it is kind of a moving target. Right there, a lot of the festivals and conventions, it's basically we're monitoring the situation and we hope to have it. By the way, I did receive a personal email from San Diego Comic-Con this week. And they told me that as of right now, they are still hoping to have the convention, but it just depends because it's so close to the deadlines that we're heading that it's going to be very
You got an email?
Yes, I did.
I didn't get an email.
Well, I contacted them. So I was begging for information.
Gotcha.
But anyways, hey, Luke Cheeseman on the couch.
What up?
What's this crazy, crazy thing that's been happening on Netflix this week?
Well, it's a little guy that likes his tigers a lot. The Tiger King.
The Tiger King.
Quite Mr. Popular to be in prison right now.
And you and Ben were talking all about it. Yeah. So what do you think?
I've been pretty entertained. It's such a bizarre story. It just gets weirder and weirder, and you cannot really trust anybody in the whole thing because they're all so wacky and weird, but you can't look away.
Just real quick, Tiger King, it's a Netflix documentary docuseries about the life of Joseph Maldonado Passage, better known as Joe Exotic, owner of a controversial exotic animal attraction. It involves mayhem, murder, madness, and all the crazy stuff. Ben, what do you think of this?
Well, let me tell you what. I grew up in South Central Kansas, so I grew up about two hours north of where this, at least where Joe Exotic's farm takes place. In fact, I grew up just outside of Hutchinson, Kansas, and at one point they do show a big poster for like Joe Exotic's traveling show, Hutchinson Mall. And so I was like, oh, yeah, that's my neck of the woods. So there's like a lot of these people, even the Floridians, because oddly enough, Oklahoma and Florida are not that different, it seems.
I'm a Floridian. I will admit it.
There you go. So it's, I'm just like, oh man, these are like people that I knew growing up. I didn't know any of these people. They're like the people, some of the people I knew growing up. So that's a trip. And my wife and I were watching it, and about halfway through the second episode, we were like, these people are nuts. Blah, turn on Clone Wars. But then at the behest of many of our friends, we were like, okay, we'll go back and watch it. So we were halfway through the fifth episode when I was like, oh, babe, I got to log on to the podcast. So it's getting nuts.
You haven't finished it yet.
I have not finished episode 5 yet, no. And I have not finished the series, no.
Nancy, what was so cool is like when you found out that we would be mentioning Tiger King tonight, you really freaked out because you love this thing, right?
Right. Okay, dude, like I hate love it. I hate love it.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh, I know.
And part of it is that I used to live in Western Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
In the Mid-South, and I have been through Oklahoma many times. I have been through that part of Kansas many times also, which is, it's funny because you're like talking about the billboards, because most of the billboards are either like anti-abortion billboards or like XXX sex store up ahead.
Right.
I swear to God, when you're driving through Kansas, wow. like that's, it's true.
Oh, come on. You got to admit there's some,
there's
some Ruby Falls. There's some C Ruby Falls billboards.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and then just like, you know, cornfields and stuff like that. But like Oklahoma is a magical place. You know, it's home to like the Flaming Lips and a buffet style restaurant called the Pig Out Palace.
There you go.
So it's like exotic, Joe Exotic just kind of like slides right in there.
Well, listen. This right now ranks as TV's most popular series, according to Rotten Tomatoes, with a 97% critic score and a 96% audience score. It is Netflix's number one most watched program right now. So for those who don't know, it really
I'm not
is
surprised.
It's crazy. It's about these exotic animal handlers that own tigers and lions and large animals, and they're kind of warring with each other over who will be the dominant large animal handler. Plus, there's the what's her name? What's the lady in Florida? Baskin.
Carol Baskin.
Yes. Yes. Jeez, what is this woman? Okay, I don't want to ruin it for everybody, but meat grinder, tigers. Just think about what you do with old husbands. It's the. It is crazy. It is crazy, and this woman is evil.
Do you think that this will be the next I, Tonya?
Ooh.
Because it could be. Apparently Kate McKinnon's already signed on to play her in a scripted show. Yeah. So I'm wondering if it's the next I, Tonya.
Get out of here. Are you serious?
Serious.
No, that's true, Jim.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
I pray to streaming Jesus.
Okay. So, Bethany, we're going to have to get you back on and do some true crime investigations into the actual case when we get a chance. That would be a lot of fun.
Oh, at your service.
All right. So, anyways, that's just our little bitty look, our preview of Tiger King. We're not going to talk about it a lot tonight because we do want to move on to a very important subject. We are about to talk about the Cecil. LA's Hotel of Horrors. Let me give you a little bit of an introduction. Standing along the darkly historic Main Street in downtown Los Angeles lies one of the most infamous buildings in horror lore, the Cecil Hotel. Since opening its doors in 1927, the Cecil Hotel has been plagued with macabre and mysterious circumstances that have made it a favorite location for ghost hunters and true crime aficionados the world over. Almost 20 different murders, suicides, and unexplained paranormal events have taken place at the hotel. And it even served, and Katie, you can tell us about this. It served as a temporary home with some of America's most notorious serial killers. And it was the inspiration for something recently on TV. Katie, what was that?
Okay, I was going to say, hold on, I was muted. All right, okay. It was on American Horror Story Hotel, which I don't know how many of you guys watched American Horror Story Hotel. It was actually one of my favorite seasons. Unlike a lot of people, there's a lot of critics about that season, but I just liked the connections between history and also like fiction at the same time, and basing it off of the Cecil without calling it that, without it being directly related to it. And one of my favorite episodes in particular, they brought in a whole bunch of murderous people on Halloween night who stayed at the hotel, and you got to see these other characters like Jeffrey Dahmer, and I can't think of her name, but the chick from Monster.
Eileen Wuornos?
So I was like, so they had her, and then they had Ramirez, is that his name?
Yeah. Richard Ramirez.
Yeah, Rick Ramirez.
The Night Stalker.
And they all came in, and basically it was a murderous dinner party with Evan Peters' character, and it was just creepy. And I just thought there was such this creepy eeriness about American Horror Story Hotel, which suited exactly what we're talking about, this whole haunted hotel where bad things happen.
Was the Night Stalker played by the same actor in the 80s one, or did they recast it for the 80s one? Because they have the same character, it sounds like, in both
seasons. The Night Stalker's in American Horror Story slash whatever the 1980 slasher season was last season.
I think 1984.
Was, season.
Was it the same season. Actor, or did they?
Was it the same actor who played the Night?
Yeah,
this is Ryan in the booth here. Yeah, it's not the same actor, I believe. It's John Carroll Lynch who plays the slasher in 1984, and it's a different actor in Hotel.
Okay.
Not a lot of the people from Hotel were in 1984. A lot of the OG cast was in Hotel, and not as much the new cast.
So. It was a pretty creepy season. And full disclosure, I used to live for 3 years. I lived next door to the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles.
Shut up.
The shadow of the Cecil was in my window every morning. I was in the Pacific Electric Loft, and I even got to go on a cool nighttime tour. It was a ghost tour, like a creepy tour of some of the hotels in downtown Los Angeles. And they did take us inside one of the supposed haunted rooms in the Cecil Hotel. And then they showed us the room where Richard Ramirez, AKA the Night Stalker, stayed. So it's a really creepy place. It felt dangerous every time you go in there. It had this feeling, hey, but Ben, but the whole reason we're doing the show tonight's show is Ben's idea, and it's a great idea because he and his lovely wife were watching a program which kind of prompted this whole discussion. If you want to go ahead and take it away.
Well, let me give you all out there listening in internet land a little idea of how this show goes. It's every episode is months in advance of preparation. Or like Saturday, I texted Jim and I was like, hey, Bree and I are watching this show called Horror at the Cecil Hotel. It's on Hulu.
Nice.
Like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. We've got to watch this show. then it turns out we have
and then
Hulu
Luke
Live TV.
Oh, yeah. And then Luke said, let's call Hulu Bethany. Live.
There you go. So,
true story.
So we were watching this show. It's a 3-episode miniseries. And it's one of these low budget, non-union reenactment shows that's like, okay, but they're talking about something real, so it makes it interesting. And I can say that because I've been on a couple of these low budget, non-union reenactment shows years ago, before I was a union actor. It was plenty to keep us fascinated. And I personally realized I kind of have this low-key obsession with the Cecil. And like I said, I grew up in Kansas. I never knew about it. Nice. I moved to California in 2010. And I don't recall hearing about the Cecil until probably just like 2 or 3 years ago when I saw a recycled story about Elisa Lam. And I was like, oh, this is kind of weird. And then it's like, oh, by the way, here's the security footage of her. And I was like, what the F is this? And so I started reading a little bit more about the Cecil. Then I forgot about it for a couple of years. And then the show came on. I was like, oh yeah, this is that like suicide hotel. And I watched the show, and the program focused on 3 cases. And we'll start off with these. We'll jump in with Bethany and Nancy here in 5 seconds. We'll start off with these, and then we'll expand on that because there's way more. So they talked about the first one was the Richard Ramirez Jack Unterwanger connection that supposedly was a situation there. Then they talked about the Pauline Otten suicide, and they loosely connected that to the potential of the Black Dahlia connection. And then the other one was the Elizabeth Lam, Elisa Lam thing. So
Elisa Lam.
Yeah. So let's open that up. Let's first of all, let's talk about the alleged connection to the Black Dahlia. Bethany, Nancy, which one of you wants to jump off first on this?
I'm gonna let her be, because she has a whole
series. I'm happy to jump in on the Black Dahlia. Our actually first season of Totally Weird Los Angeles, our podcast, our feature story is all about the Black Dahlia. So I have been through all those old newspaper articles, allegedly stole a book from the library that's out of print, stuff like that. But one of the things that people confuse a lot is they think that the Cecil Hotel is the last place that the Black Dahlia was seen. We call her Betty, actually, because we think that it is important to make it known that she's a person, that she's not like some kind of hero or a myth, that she's a person.
Elizabeth so Short.
Betty was not, yes, Betty was not last seen at the Cecil Hotel, but we do know that she stayed there. She was kind of a couch surfer, a bed hopper, for all of her life, really, you know, from like her late teens on, mid teens on. And the Cecil we know was definitely a place where she stayed, but the last place she was actually seen was at the Biltmore, which when my great grandfather left the Coconut Grove, he was the maitre d' at the Biltmore for like 20 years. So I have yet to find out. We do have like all the FBI files, which are like hundreds and hundreds of pages. LAPD can't release their files because it's still an ongoing investigation, but we do have the FBI files and they're all like handwritten notes and stuff like that. So I have yet to come across my great, great grandfather's name. And I don't know if he was the maitre d' on duty who was like the last one who identified her to the police, but so the Biltmore was the last place she was seen, which is another place that is super scary. But yeah, that is kind of the connection with the Cecil and with Betty Short.
So, okay.
Yeah. Right. Because even on, so on this program, when they were doing the reenactment scene, they, you know, they had this whole story of the detectives that were covering the scene. And this was the one detective's first day on the job. And the other detective was telling him about his first day on the job 15 years ago. And it was the Black Dahlia murder and how, you know, this connection to the Cecil.
Oh, how funny.
You know, but I can't say for certain, but I'm sure it was completely fabricated.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I've read all of those books that like the police officers have written about that time period and all of that stuff. And they like weren't interested in her, did not know who she was, did not care who she was until they found the body. Even then they were like, oh, bummer, another pretty dead girl in LA, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
It was really the newspaper reporter, Aggie Underwood, who like made a big deal about the whole thing. She was the first one on the scene. And when you see the quote unquote police photos of the Black Dahlia, they went to the newspapers before they went to the police.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's another thing about crime and like the way the police worked, at least in LA at that time. A lot of journalists actually had a desk in the police office. So as information was coming into the police, like they weren't just getting tips, like they were getting their leads right there directly from the cop sitting next to them, kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
Journalists could go right into the jailers. They could go to all the crime scenes. You didn't need press credentials or anything like that, like they used to give us. You could, you know, walk right in. And interestingly enough, there was a lot of competition between the journalists and the police at the time to solve a crime. And there were a lot of informants that would only work with the journalists and not the police. And so there was a lot of really interesting exchange of information. But I will tell you something else about the Cecil Hotel at the time, is that there was a ring of prostitutes in Hollywood and LA at the time, call girls, sex workers, as we would refer to them now. But they were kind of technically call girls at the time. They weren't like, say, streetwalkers, which is a pretty crude term that we don't use anymore. But they weren't kind of that sort of level of sex worker. But what they would do is they would use various different hotels all over LA, including the Cecil Hotel. And their Johns would call in to a main number. And that night, the madam would give each sex worker a list of hotels and hotel room numbers to show up at what time. So like maybe she'd have like a 9 o'clock at the Cecil Hotel and a 10 o'clock at the St. Francis and, you know, an 11:30 at the Biltmore, you know, kind of thing. And they all had to call in from the payphone at the hotel and, you know, let them know they arrived and what time they left and stuff like that, because they kept track of all of their time. So at the time, the Cecil was definitely used for that as well.
Yeah. So there's this whole situation where it's like, all right, Reginald, can you hurry this up? I got a 9:15. I'm running behind four.
Exactly. I got to get across town, you know, by 9:30. Yeah.
Now, to connect to the case from the particular episode we're talking about, the Pauline Otten, Bethany, what do you know about the Pauline Otten suicide case? Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not as familiar with that case as I am like the Jack case or Elisa Lam case.
Okay.
Well, let's jump to those then.
Yeah, let's do it. That's a good one.
Yeah. There we go. So Elisa Lam is mythological in this city, right? People want to solve it. Have any of you seen the footage of her in the elevator?
Yes.
Yes, and it's creepy as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
It's so wild. Have any of you ever tried to like hide yourself in the an elevator just to see how that would look? Like
no.
You don't
know who's
behind her and the well, anyway, it's so creepy to me. The creepiest element is that the only way she was found is because people found bad taste in their water because of her decomposing
in the water.
Hey, Bethany, could you give the viewers who don't know about the case, can you give them a short description of exactly what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so sorry. I like to hit to my favorite points of a case.
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
So Elisa Lam was a beautiful, smart, well-deserving traveler. And she was staying at the Cecil Hotel. And she just stopped corresponding with friends and family, and people were like, oh well, she went on to her next journey and she's traveling somewhere else. And a few days later it was like, oh, there's a funky taste in the water at the Cecil Hotel. So they went up to investigate, you know, the workers at the hotel, and they found her decomposing body in the water tank
on top of that.
And can you tell about the surveillance video?
Yes. So the surveillance video is available online. I don't know if you guys are going to post it.
Sure. We'll post it.
Essentially, you see a woman enter an elevator, and there's someone in the elevator or maybe something thing she's corresponding with, communicating with, and she gets out, and that's the last you see of her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Bethany, I have a question for you. We've all seen the footage, right? I'm assuming all of us in this conversation.
Yeah.
Do you, Bethany? Do you think? Oh my gosh! You've got to watch it, and it's super creepy.
I mainly haven't because I don't know how creeped out I'm going to get. So I was like, I'm going to wait until watch this another day, maybe.
watch it during the day when you're not home alone or something.
Let's
like
just
that.
Just play it on the show.
There's people around.
You now know the
let's do a reaction video, Katie.
Oh, God. Bethany, do you think that what Elisa Lam was experiencing, do you think that it was mental illness? Do you think that there was a ghost? Or do you think that there was like a human being there that was like trying to creep her out or attack her or mess with her or something? What do you think?
if there was someone else in there, why haven't we seen that footage?
Yeah.
We would see, like, they would have released it. Hey, do you recognize this individual? Do you know who this person is? And so, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not never going to purport to be. So I'm not going to speak to her mental illness or wellness. But I'd be surprised if there was another person in there. Now, that being said, I don't want to rule that out. You know, maybe there's someone that had been in there and writing it up and down all afternoon waiting for her, you know.
And for those of you who haven't seen the footage, we see Elisa. She gets on the elevator. She looks out like somebody is chasing her. She's recoils back into the corner trying to hide. Then she hits a lot of the buttons. And then she also goes back out.
Like almost every button in the elevator. Yeah. And then she just walks out of it, doesn't even go up in the elevator.
She walks out and she waves her arms around like she's yelling at somebody. And then you see her walk off camera, and then she is never seen again until she is discovered in the water tank. And that's, it just sent everybody across the internet was like, holy crap, what is it that this woman, she was obviously either it's whether mental illness, a real person, or a paranormal being. She was frightened, it appeared to be, and she was running from something. So that's why this is such an eerie case. And it just happened in 2013.
Energy, that frenetic.
Yeah.
Where you know, whatever it is she's running from something. So what is that thing? And we don't know. How creepy is that? We don't know to this day what that thing is.
There's some other super creep details. Well, and
the other thing is that
sorry, go ahead, Nancy.
The footage is silent. There's no sound either. So it's like you just see all of this without hearing any of the context. You can't hear if somebody was like in the hallway going, yoo-hoo, or, you know, I'm coming for you or something. And that's why she poked her head back out. Like, we don't know. And to me, like, looking at it, it looks like somebody who's having like a mental breakdown. But there's just not enough context to really know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Ben, what are you saying?
There's some super creep in some of the details that I zeroed in on and that just fascinate me. You know, she was Canadian, visiting LA. She was a college age girl. And she was kind of doing this first traveling out in the world on her own type of thing. They found all of her possessions in her room. Except for her cell phone. A laptop was left, no signs of struggle, no signs of robbery, anything like that. She had been missing for a number of days before the tap water incident. They climbed up, they found her in the tank completely naked, drowned. The coroner's report ruled it an accidental drowning.
Yeah.
She hadn't been forcefully drowned. She hadn't been strangled. She hadn't been stabbed, shot, anything like that. And so they couldn't really say this was a murder. But the other side of that is, could this maybe 110-pound woman get up onto the roof with an alarm sensor door without tripping the alarm, climb up, so which means she would have had to go up on a fire escape, climb up the exterior ladder of a rooftop water feed, lift up a 20-pound hydraulic latch on top of a water tank, take off all her clothes,
did climb they find
into
her clothes?
The water tank. I'm not sure.
I think they were in the tank with her, maybe.
Were they?
But maybe not.
That's what I had read. Yeah.
I thought they were.
Okay. Climb into the tank, take off all her clothes while treading water, and then reach up and pull the latch back closed on top of her, and then drown in the dark. That's
for sure
a pretty far stretch. The creepiest detail to me was 28 days after her death, her Tumblr page updated with the tarot card of the hermit.
Yeah.
And allegedly, I just looked up online, apparently there were a handful of other Tumblr updates after that.
That's bizarre.
But oh, there was more than one. Wow.
Yeah,
the tarot card of the hermit.
I didn't know that about
the hermit.
Mm-hmm.
We hear it also on a. You were saying hypothetically, like, she's a 110-pound girl, approximately, and she's a small person of stature, and we don't know how strong she was. That's I'm not that small, but I was at one point in my life. I don't think I could have done that, all that being who I am. I'm not an athletically built person, and I'm assuming that she was probably just your average girl of that frame. Not saying that you can't. Some people can do some pretty, like, especially if there is something else going on, I could see maybe possibly, but just on a normal day, no. I couldn't do all that.
I think somebody did it.
Yeah, the thing
and
is...
And then there's also the possibility that she somehow died of natural causes, and somebody was like, oh my God, I gotta get rid of this body, and then decided to dispose of the body in the water tank.
Which...
There's a lot of variables.
Yeah, which is par for the course for the Cecil Hotel, from what we've heard. It's there's a body every few years, you know, that needs to be disposed of around there. So that was probably one of the most recent salacious things that had happened there. But in 1985, there was 1985 and 1991. Ben, if you can describe this episode and kind of like ask Bethany and Nancy, if they could comment on this one. This one was very creepy, yeah.
Well, I can't speak to the validity of a few of these facts, but allegedly in 1985, the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez? Richard?
Yep.
Richard Ramirez. Yeah. Richard Ramirez.
He stayed there in, allegedly in room 1408, and had stayed there either prior to or while he was... committing his serial murders. And then, what was it, 6 years later, Austrian murderer turned journalist turned murderer, what was it, Jack Unterbanger?
Yes.
Jack.
He then apparently had requested to stay in the same room. He had been inspired by Ramirez and came to leave his own mark on America as a serial murderer. And posed as a writer, which he was, a journalist, and did write-alongs with the LAPD.
Bizarre.
Under the guise of talking about the crime of LA, but he was actually using it as reconnaissance for his crimes.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you guys know about that one?
Nancy, well,
I'm happy
why don't you
to
jump
talk
in
about
first?
Ramirez just a little bit, because... Ramirez is like my number one, like, is probably like the very first thing as a young child that scared the absolute fuck out of me. Mm-hmm. I was a little girl living in LA. I was, you know, in elementary school, and I remember asking my dad, why does he kill people? You know, because I could understand somebody killing somebody out of anger, or they stolen something. And my dad is trying to like explain to like this, you know, kindergarten first grader that sometimes people kill for no good reason. And so he's like, he just kills people for no reason. You know, he kills people like if they don't leave the porch light on. Okay, so like every night for the next 10 years, I was the porch light monitor. And my bedroom was right next to the front porch. So I could see through my bedroom window if it was on or off. And I am a lifelong insomniac, since I was, you know, an infant. And so my parents would, you know, finish watching Murphy Brown and go turn the porch light off and go to bed. And I would wait until they had gone into their bedroom, and I would sneak downstairs and I would turn the porch light back on. And sometimes my mom would walk back out thinking, oh, didn't a little bit longer, and run downstairs to save my family from being murdered.
That's terrifying.
So the whole 85, like, from right, you know. And it's like, because you know what, these were the days when we let children watch the news. Like, we don't really let kids watch the news anymore, you know. I mean, in the first place, like, we don't watch TV the same way that we used to. We, you know, freaking binge watch, you know, Tiger King instead.
Of course.
And we, you know, read, you know, we read Facebook headlines, you know, or whatever. But, you know, back then it's like we would have school assignments where they were like, watch the news tonight and report on something that you saw on the news.
I apologize. Sorry, keep going.
That's okay. Oh, I lost you there. Yeah, you know, so like Ramirez has been my number one forever, and he did kill in my neighborhood, and and so like that was super scary. I remember when he was caught, and then two years ago, the head investigator, Lieutenant Gil Carrillo, he put out a book and did a big talk at the library downtown. And I was like, well, I totally have to go. So my partner, Carrie, and I went down there. And actually, it is still online. If you go to the LAPL website, which is the LA Public Library, it's part of their speaker series, and the entire interview with Gil is online, where he talks about the years that he spent hunting Richard Ramirez. And it just absolutely permeated our culture to the core at the time. Young children, women out alone and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's crazy. That is crazy. And like, it's kind of, you hear the stories about like how, you know, during the Manson murders that LA was just held in terror. And it's the same thing for the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. And we only have a few minutes left, but Bethany, did you have anything about Jack Unterweger? How do you say, Unterweger.
Jack Unterweger.
Yeah.
I think what's so fascinating about Jack is that he was consumed by the content he created, you know, and it's this question of, was he created as a monster, or did the monster create him from his work? And, you know, he was drawn to the Cecil Hotel. So it brings it back to the initial concept of this whole show. This man was drawn there, the energy, the spirit, the whole entity of this hotel is why he stayed there. He wasn't like, oh my gosh, let me go find this other hotel and then dip in and out. Like, he wanted to be there to the point now, if you are a writer and you go to the Cecil Hotel and you're just, you know, like checking it out, walking around, they will ask you to leave.
Oh my God.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like if you just like show up and you're like, hey, I'm a journalist, I'm a writer, I'm talking about this. They're like, do you have a room? Do you have a reservation? Get out.
Yeah. So. You know, and as we finish up the show, I just do have to ask, because I'm on this page of all the murders and violence that happened at the Cecil Hotel, and it's very long. In the early part of the last century, there was such a number of suicides. There was a woman who tossed her baby out the window. People who were jumping out of the windows.
It's horrifying.
And then one of the most famous ones is the pigeon lady, an older lady who lived in the hotel. She was 85, I think, Bethany, or something like that. And she was...
I actually did a tour of the kind of ghosts and haunted of downtown LA, and she was brought up on that tour. So I think you're absolutely right. It's just very sad.
She was found killed and raped in her room, and she was in her 80s there in the Cecil Hotel. And the list just goes on and on. So as we end the show, I don't always end on a down note, but the Cecil, I've got to ask you, as our guest especially, and Ben, I really want to know what you think. Is there something about the Cecil, or is it just the neighborhood? Is there something at the Cecil that brings on this horror? What do you guys think?
Nancy, go.
I think that the neighborhood down there for a long time was really, really sketchy for decades and decades. And the hotels around there have always been very, very exceptionally transient. But I think that there's something special about the Cecil.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, like Bethany said, I think that there is an energy that kind of stays in there and draws people to it. And mm-hmm. it's just, you know, it's got a massive creep factor.
Oh, Bethany.
I do. You know, I think that you look at Europe and you look at these ancient haunted castles and chateaus and places, and I think that's LA's version of it. It's this place that just is mired and drenched in terrible history and creepiness. And I mean, I would love to take one of my good friends who's a ghost hunter down there just to see what she gets. And
I'm coming.
Yeah, Jim wants to go.
Yes.
Ben.
I thought about this because I all of a sudden started getting inspired, and I am not a documentarian, but I'm very interested in potentially becoming one. And I was like, oh man, what if I took a documentary crew and I stayed a night in the Cecil? And I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to do that.
I could never stay the night.
Right. But I have stayed the night at the Biltmore, but the Biltmore isn't as fully, it's like the fourth floor at the Biltmore. Don't go there. Everything else is fine. You know, this is like the entire hotel. Now, I am a man of faith, and so I believe there's a lot of things about the other side that we really don't know a lot about. Mm-hmm. And I also think maybe you shouldn't mess with it. And there may be some places where the plane between this realm and the beyond might be a little thinner. There's a town in Kansas called Stull, if you've ever heard of that, that has an old cemetery that used to be next to a church that's been knocked down many years. And a lot of people think, oh, it's one of the seven portals to hell or eight portals to hell or whatever it is. But I think the Cecil Hotel might be sitting on top of one of these naturally, you know, thinner pass-betweens between some sort of malevolent spiritual other side and our realm. So, but I don't know.
You know,
we need to send Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Exactly. Buffy will take care of it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Winchesters before they retire this year. But I'm always reminded of something like this, the line from one of my favorite movies, The Amityville Horror, the original version, where they're trying to buy this house. They find out that there was a murder, and the guy tells his wife, well, houses don't have memories, do they? And maybe places have memories. Maybe there's so much has started happened at the Cecil, it just remembers it, and it keeps it, and it festers. All I know is it's a scary-ass place, Ben. If you go down there and spend the night, I am coming. I'm going with whoever.
All right.
I can't wait.
Deal.
If we were not all sequestered right now, I was going to go down there and take some pictures and do some filming, but decided against it. Bethany go ahead, Katie.
Sorry, I think I filmed something as an extra once at the Biltmore, and I was creeped out just, you know, because you're spending all day there and it's getting quiet, and, you know, when things are quiet, you tend to be, like, kind of more noticeable of things. But just even, like, you know, it's not technically in downtown LA, but, like, even the Queen Mary, I went there as a kid in a household, very religious household that very much did not believe in ghosts. We did not believe in ghosts. My mom, you know, I wasn't allowed to dress up as a ghost on Halloween. So, you know, like, when I was a kid, I thought something was up with the Queen Mary. So I do think that I like the way I think Jim just said it about just like the history of these places become their story. And so it doesn't mm-hmm. really, you don't really need, I guess it's more, you don't really need to know because enough people are going to think what they want to think, and everyone's going to have their own way of interpreting it. Because, you know, some people will be like, no, that's all in people's head. People are making it up. That's not true. But other people, it's very real to them.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And I kind of like a haunted house, you know, certain things like to stick around. It seems like there's a lot of locations, or I know with Jim, we've talked about stories of different camps having kind of a dark feel to it. And I feel like mm-hmm. I do truly feel the Cecil Hotel is one of them. And one of our viewers on here was mentioning, you know, since we're a horror podcast, has anybody seen the movie 1408? Star Drew was mentioning on here that maybe it looks like part of that movie was kind of based on the feel of this. It's called the Dolphin Hotel, so I assume it's kind of fictional. I feel like I've seen part of it, New York. The whole thing. Yeah.
But it's called- I actually think I'm... I think I misspoke. I think Ramirez and Unterbanger stayed in 1406 because then I looked up the movie. I'm like, is that the same as the Cusack movie? And it's the movie's 1408, but it takes place in New York. It's but definitely probably inspiration.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we got it. We do have to wrap up. Bethany and Nancy Reagan, thank you guys so much for coming on the show tonight. You have just added thank so you. Much. Bethany, where can people find you online and how do they follow you?
Please follow us at the Pros and Cons podcast on both Instagram and Facebook. We have a private group and public feed, and at the Pros and Cons show on Twitter, and we'll see you there. And if you follow you guys, we retweeted you today.
And we hope to see you again back here as well. Nancy, where can we find you folks?
You can find us on our website at totallyweirdla.com and on
say that one more time. I think you cut out.
You prefer.
Hey, we're sorry, Nancy.
Totallyweirdla.com. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Totallyweirdla.com and any podcast app you prefer.
Okay, awesome. Very
you
cool.
You can listen to our Totally Weird Los Angeles podcast.
And we are going to link over to both of you, both Bethany's and Nancy's sites tonight. All right, everybody else, starting with Katie, where can we find you guys?
I'm Katie Kawamoto. You can find me doing the Scare Guy and Con Guy Twitters, but also my personal is KP_Christine on both Instagram and Twitter. I've been very active lately. Since, I've had a lot of downtime. So you can also find me, I do a host other shows such as the Batwoman After Show and the Riverdale After Show, both over on AfterBuzz TV, 10:10 on Sundays for Batwoman and 9:10 for Riverdale on Wednesdays. Both on hiatus right now, though, but when we come back. So.
And I am Ben Cleaver, at BenKlieWer on all social media. Generally, I'm an actor and comedian, but I'm not doing anything right now. So I am trying to be a little bit more active on social media. So tweet at me. And I am a regular contributor to the Con Guy podcast, occasional contributor to the website. And I was even a guest on the Star Wars podcast with Ryan, our wonderful producer.
That's awesome.
Yes, it was right, awesome. It was a blast.
Cheeseman.
And I'm Cheeseman on the workout bike right now. Usually Cheeseman on the couch. You can find me on Twitter at Cheese on Couch. You can find me on the scareguy.com. And also just want to promote Monster Tees. They do awesome shirts. Support your vendors that are all at these horror conventions. It's been hard because a lot of these events have been canceled. So support them. Check out their stuff. Buy it. They do awesome stuff. Monster Tees, TEASE is how, not actually like T-shirts, but MonsterTees.com.
They're teasing you.
They're teasing yes. you.
We'll put a link to them as well. Also, my name is Jim Fry. That is Jim Fry LA on Twitter. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you for tuning in. Please stay safe. Wash your hands. Call your friends. Visit them via Skype or Zoom. Please subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and leave good comments and be good to each other. Guys, it's scary enough out there. Let's make sure that when we're celebrating scary stuff, it's the fun scary. All right. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.